Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts with a look at California agricultural news.
Early registration for the 2024 Crop Consultant Conference, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors, is now open. The popular event for certified crop advisors, pest control advisors, grower applicators, and industry professionals is the mainstay for all continuing education needs this year and will take place on September 25th and 26th at the Visalia Convention Center. Visit myaglife.com/events for the early discounted rate of $275 per person, which includes the live conference, a trade show with 70-plus exhibits, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. We'll see you there.
State water regulators have voted to place an agricultural hub in Central California under probation due to excessive groundwater pumping that has dried up the region. Citing multiple deficiencies in the Tulare Lake Basin's groundwater sustainability plans, the State Water Resources Control Board made the decision to toughen usage restrictions and reporting requirements in the southern portion of the San Joaquin Valley. Excessive groundwater extraction can cause long-term overdraft, failed wells, deteriorated water quality, environmental damage, and irreversible land subsidence, according to a draft version of the probation resolution. These effects, the resolution continued, both damage infrastructure and reduce the capacity of aquifers to store water for the future, taking a considerable economic toll. The vote constituted the first time in state history in which water regulators used their authority to crack down on community-level groundwater declines via the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, according to the Los Angeles Times. The State Water Board defines probation as a first phase of intervention which requires most groundwater pumpers to cover costs associated with assessment, planning, and enforcement costs. Water extraction has taken a dramatic toll, and certain spots of the northwestern and western side of the Tulare Lake Basin sunk as much as 6 feet from June 2015 to April 2023, according to the report. Proposed state legislation to modify California's longstanding farmland conservation law could pave the way for large swaths of farm acreage to be repurposed as sites for renewable energy projects, including solar power. Assembly Bill 2528, introduced by Assemblymember Joaquin Arambula, a Democrat from Fresno, would allow owners of Williamson Act land that lacks sufficient water for farming to cancel their contracts without paying mandated cancellation fees of 12.5% of land value. Farm advocates warn the proposed law could accelerate the loss of farmland and reduce food supply. Despite favorable conditions in the Klamath Basin, irrigators say the initial federal water allocation falls short of what farmers in the Klamath Water Project should receive this year. The U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, which manages the project, announced this week that Klamath Basin irrigators will receive an initial allocation of 230,000 acre-feet from the lake. That is 35% less than estimated needs, according to Paul Simmons, executive director and counsel for the Klamath Water Users Association. He said the allocation is the fifth worst in the 120-year history of the Klamath Project. California counties, key to delivering services for public safety, emergency response, and protecting human health, are bracing for state revenue cuts as California faces a historic budget deficit. The fiscal crisis creates concerns in rural agricultural counties as local governments look for ways to fund core needs such as fire services. Merced County is already struggling to fund public safety services, including fire, sheriff's department, and ambulance services. Merced County Assistant Fire Chief Mark Pimentel says the county is operating below state minimum staffing requirements. With $3 million in grant funding exhausted, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife is no longer accepting applications for the Wolf Livestock Compensation Program, according to the agency. A total of 109 grants were awarded to 36 ranchers with livestock operations in four of the nine counties with known wolf activity. Those counties include Siskiyou, Lassen, Plumas, and Tulare. Established in 2021, the pilot program compensated livestock producers for verified loss of livestock. Direct livestock losses accounted for $135,044. More than $1.9 million went for wolf deterrent tools. San Jose-based Zag Technical Services, an IT consulting firm specializing in cybersecurity, data analytics, and managed services in the ag and food beverage industries, has announced the launch of a new webinar series designed to empower agricultural businesses with the knowledge and tools necessary to protect their digital infrastructure against increasing cyber threats. Their mission is to not only provide top-tier cybersecurity solutions, but also to educate and enable the agribusinesses that are at the heart of our economy, according to Albert Brown, Director of Strategic Initiatives at Zag. Zag is offering its expertise through a specially curated series of webinars aimed at elevating the cybersecurity posture and efficiencies of agricultural entities, according to the company. The first two webinars are scheduled for April 24th and May 1st. They will focus on a range of topics pertinent to cybersecurity and data utilization to protect, cut costs, and optimize business functions in agriculture. Sessions will be led by seasoned professionals and subject to matter experts at Zag, including featured guests in several sessions who will share insights on the latest threats, defensive strategies, and trends. Topics will include, but are not limited to, cybersecurity in today's ag digital ecosystem, technology disruption risk mitigation, the wide-reaching effects of a cyber attack, cyber incident preparedness, response and recovery, data protection and utilization. Each webinar will include 20 minutes of information and guidance with a 10-minute live Q&A session following. For more information, log on to zagtech.com, and it's spelled Z-A-G, so zagtech.com. Sunworld International LLC, a global fruit variety development and licensing company, has successfully stopped fraudulent activity in China on the popular social media platform TikTok. Recently, Sunworld became aware of unauthorized individuals attempting to misrepresent the company on TikTok, falsely claiming association with Sunworld and promoting fraudulent services under the guise of providing technical support for Autumn Crisp, a successful and highly demanded proprietary green seedless table grape variety developed and owned by Sunworld. In response, Sunworld's legal team swiftly took action, filing a complaint with TikTok to address the fraudulent content. As a result of these efforts, TikTok promptly removed the misleading advertisements, ensuring users are protected from deceptive practices. Sunworld emphasizes that any party seeking to grow Sunworld table grape varieties marketed under renowned consumer brands including Ruby Rush, Autumn Crisp, Midnight Beauty, Sable Seedless, Adora Seedless, and Scarlotta Seedless must obtain a valid license from Sunworld. The company remains committed to safeguarding its intellectual property rights and maintaining the integrity of its varieties and brands. Sunworld remains steadfast in its commitment to innovation, quality, and ethical business practices, and will continue to take decisive action to safeguard its intellectual property assets, according to the company. Kings County growers will face millions of dollars in fees and a mandate to report groundwater pumping after California officials voted unanimously to put local agencies on probation for failing to protect the region's underground water supply. The unprecedented decision is a first step that could eventually lead to the state wresting control of a groundwater basin in a severely depleted part of the San Joaquin Valley. Before issuing the probation order, the State Water Resources Control Board had reportedly warned five groundwater agencies in Kings County that their management plan for the Tulare Lake Basin is seriously deficient, failing to rein in the dried-up wells, contaminated water, and sinking earth worsened by overpumping. Located in the southern end of the San Joaquin Valley, the Tulare Lake Basin is the main source of drinking and irrigation water for 146,000 residents and the agriculture that sustains Kings County economy. Five other overdrafted San Joaquin Valley basins also may face probation. Small farmers spoke up during a marathon 9-hour hearing, saying that the state fees on top of the fees proposed by local agencies could drive them out of business. The state's pumping fees of $20 per acre foot alone could reach almost $10 million a year in Kings County, according to CalMatters analysis based on average groundwater use reported between 2015 and 2022. The state can also levy an annual fee of $300 per well, and heavy water users may have to install meters on their wells. State Water Board Chair E. Joaquin Esquivel acknowledged the pain and frustration that small farmers expressed at the hearing, saying the goal is not to be punitive in the least and simply see probation as a step within a process. He said the purpose of the fees is not to punish those basins, but to pay for the additional workload. Several small farmers said they've been excluded from the local planning process and placed the blame for the overdraft on the region's large agricultural companies.
By partnering with JCS Marketing Incorporated, your company can achieve 3.5 million impressions to growers, consultants, and industry professionals annually. Our comprehensive media suite, which includes prestigious publications as well as dynamic websites, targeted emails, engaging podcasts, and premier trade shows, provides a strategic platform for targeting key decision makers. This approach can amplify your company's visibility to a specific audience and fosters meaningful connections, positioning your brand at the forefront of the agricultural community. Don't wait for success to come to you. Call our office today at 559-352-4456. That's 559-352-4456. The United States Environmental Protection Agency's draft biological evaluation effects determinations and mitigation strategy for federally listed and proposed endangered and threatened species and designated and proposed critical habitats concerning rodenticide use has been released, and many are considering it to be a far-reaching federal proposal that could have tremendous impacts on the western United States. More closely at the state level, Assembly Bill 2552 would ban the use of first and second generation rodenticides in wildlife areas, which would be redefined as any, quote, open space and require a 5,000-foot buffer around that area. This is a build-on to prior legislation, according to Western Plant Health President Renee Pinnell.
In prior versions, it eliminated the use of second generation as well as first generation in a previous bill, but it had an ag carve-out to make sure that farmers could make sure that their warehouses and their farms themselves were protected from rodents. This bill would eliminate that ag carve-out, as well as greatly expand the area that would be covered, that would be considered, you know, part of that most at-risk areas, and redefine basically what an agriculture or what a wildlife area is to be open space as opposed to a designated wildlife area. The bill would also, for the first time, provide a private right of action, which means that individual could file a lawsuit against a farmer who's using a rodenticide or an applicator who applies a rodenticide on behalf of either a rodent or a non-target species. Not that there was a take that they were killed, but that they were harassed in some way. And so it greatly expands the area of private litigation in the use of rodenticides, and it will literally make it untenable for a farmer or an applicator to be able to use or apply a rodenticide in California.
Clearly a severe proposal, Pinnell agreed. The rodenticide proposal appears to be far more severe than even DPR's Sustainable Pest Management Roadmap rolled out last year.
At least in DPR's Sustainable Pest Management Roadmap, that there is, in theory, built in a thought process towards the decision of when a product should no longer be available. And there has to be a scientific finding involved. This is just making assumptions that it's jumping way ahead of the SPM roadmap and eliminating tools not based on any scientific data that demonstrates any kind of a risk.
In reality, a more scientific process is needed to determine what the rodenticide proposal is actually suggesting. Looking at this issue improperly undersells the true risk that rodents propose to the agriculture industry, both from economic and health perspectives.
You have risks at every level of your food supply, basically. You have risk to the food supplies while they're still in field, whether it's rodents getting up into orchard trees and damaging products that way, or frankly burrowing into holes, damaging trees, putting farm workers frankly at risk because they then have a risk of tripping and falling. Or what we see quite a bit of is when you have types of rats that house themselves in trees, when the farm workers then have to go and harvest that fruit, you now have rodents jumping out of trees at these workers, which is, you know, very unfair to these workers. It puts them at risk of being bitten. It puts them risk of falling. Again, the amount of food damage that can take place. So that's just at the farm itself. Then you have, once you move those produce into a warehouse setting, the risk of having various types of rodents then get in and start eating those, whether it's a grain nut or fresh produce, there's a if those facilities are not protected from the outside in, then the risk of damage is very high. And when you start having, again, any type of exposure from a rodent to a food supply, you have a human health risk. So you have hantaviruses, you have the bubonic plague coming back, you have typhus coming back. All of this is exposure. The closer you get to that human contact with a rodent or human contact with a food supply because of rodents, you're putting not only the product itself and the economics to, sustainability of a farmer at risk, but you're putting a human health hazard in place that, in effect, we are allowing because we are looking the other way in protecting our food supply. And whether that's just because in the past we've been so conscientious, the agriculture community, about protecting these food supplies, that people just take it for granted that somehow you can grow something in the field and have it make it all the way to a grocery store, and nothing is going to compromise that. And so people are just ignorant of it, or they are choosing to go to be blind for that risk in order to, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, kind of indulge in the more romantic view of protecting these non-target species.
Thankfully, nothing is yet set in stone. Western Plant Health and other ag organizations are submitting comments opposing confines of the rodenticide proposal and are awaiting a response. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Jahlstrom.
House Ag Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson says his committee will without a doubt mark up a farm bill before Memorial Day on May 27th. After repeated delays in a farm bill process, Successful Farming reports that Republicans on the Senate Ag Committee plan to release a farm bill framework shortly after the House panel takes action. However, Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow says that the Senate hasn't set a specific timeline to move the bill. A farm bill is 6 months overdue. Legislators say they're working hard to pass a farm bill this year, despite impasses on crop subsidies, climate, and SNAP cuts. Farmers and pesticide applicators grappling with how to comply with the Environmental Protection Agency's impending herbicide strategy learned this week that new requirements may not be as stringent or widespread as the agency initially proposed in its draft strategy released last summer. EPA has announced it has published an update regarding progress on the strategy, the agency's plan to meet its obligations under the Endangered Species Act. The update offered the first look at how public comments and stakeholder feedback have been used to revise the strategy, a final version which is due out by August 3rd. In its update announcement, EPA noted it's making changes to make the strategy easier to understand, increase flexibility for growers to implement mitigation measures, and reduce the amount of mitigation that may be needed. The draft released in July of 2023 required agricultural herbicide users, mainly farmers, to implement mitigation measures such as vegetative filter strips, grass waterways, and field borders to protect endangered species and their critical habitat from herbicide exposure through spray drift and or runoff or soil erosion. Herbicide users would need to achieve a minimum number of efficacy points, with EPA assigning 1 to 3 points to each option in its menu of mitigation measures. The number of points required would vary based on the herbicide and the location of the field. Time has named Beth Ford, Land O'Lakes President and CEO, to the 2024 Time 100, its annual list of the 100 most influential people in the world. The list recognizes the impact, innovation, and achievement of the world's most influential individuals. She says she's honored to be mentioned among the impressive group of people. Farmers, cooperatives, and ag retailers carry most of the risk in the food system. She also says without investment in rural America, including its communities, businesses, and families, the interconnected global food chain is vulnerable. Ford has held senior positions in 7 companies in 6 industries. USDA has just announced an investment that could help bring fresh and healthful foods to places where such foods can be hard to find. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has the story.
In this country today, there are still places where people don't have easy access to fresh, healthy foods, such as fruits and vegetables, but there's a lot of work going on to change that. The latest development coming this week from Deputy Agriculture Secretary Sochil Torres-Small, who told reporters,
USDA Rural Development and the Reinvestment Fund are announcing the selection of 16 partnerships that will receive more than $40 million in grants under the Healthy Food Financing Initiative Partnerships Program to expand access to nutritious and affordable foods in 20 states and in Washington, D.C.
Grants will be used by local organizations to do things like establishing new local markets and supply chains and helping local food retailers to offer more fresh produce for their customers.
So people who live in some of the most remote parts of the country don't have to travel so far from home to find fresh, healthy food.
And farmers don't have to ship their products hundreds of miles just to find buyers for them. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The Food and Agriculture Information Sharing and Analysis Center has released its first annual report on ransomware incidents in the U.S. food and agriculture sector. The report shows that while there were fewer ransomware incidents in the industry than other sectors, ransomware actors have shown a level of sophistication and understanding of sector victims. The Food and Ag ISAC found 167 ransomware attacks against the sector out of 2,905 total ransomware incidents studied in 2023. Which was 5.5% of all attacks. Ransomware hackers use malicious codes to encrypt critical data so an organization cannot access files, databases, or applications, rendering systems unusable unless the victim pays a ransom. Ransomware remains a serious threat to all business sectors, including the food and ag industry, that according to Jonathan Braley, director of the Food and Ag ISAC. Despite several hacker disruptions by law enforcement, cyber attackers often operate in countries that turn a blind eye to their efforts.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.